Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Hello and welcome back to the RTC Weekly Download, our weekly variety show of old-time radio. Well, on today's schedule, it's going to be strictly comedy. And we'll start off with an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly, and we'll follow that up with The Halls of Ivy. And the thing with this is that the writer for Fibber McGee and Molly, Don Quinn, also did the writing on Halls of Ivy, which starred Ronald and Benita Coleman. So you have an hour of great listening coming right up. We'll start off with Fibber McGee and Molly and Old Friend Homer Pays a Debt. That's from 1947. And The Halls of Ivy is Professor Walden's Son. That's from 1952. Let's get started with Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax Products for Home and Industry present Fibber McGee and Molly with Bill Thompson, Gail Gordon, Arthur Q. Bryan, and me, Harlow Wilcox. The script is by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie. Music and directed by Frank Pittman, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. Don't forget to send in for the beautiful personal car initials we're mailing to listeners who buy Johnson's Car New. You'll be doing yourself a good turn two ways when you take advantage of this unusual offer. You'll not only discover what a wonderful, easy-to-use car polish Johnson's Car New is, it actually cleans and polishes your car in one application, you'll also receive two sets of your own personal decal initials to set off your newly polished car. Believe me, these car initials are really smart. They're tastefully designed and easy to apply. Each letter is half an inch high and finished in a beautiful gold color that goes perfectly with any color car. And here's the only way you can get these specially designed car initials. It's easy. Just get some Johnson's Car New from your dealer. Then send the sales slip or the name of the dealer from whom you bought your Car New, together with a stamped self-addressed envelope, to Fibber McGee and Molly, Racine, Wisconsin. If you live in Canada, address your request for initials to Fibber McGee and Molly, Brantford, Ontario. Here are the simple instructions again. Just buy some Johnson's Car New. Then send the sales slip, together with a stamped self-addressed envelope, to Fibber McGee and Molly, Racine, Wisconsin. It's a pretty exciting prospect when a fellow you loaned money to years ago wants to come and pay you a visit, particularly when the fellow you loaned the money to is now a millionaire, and you are still Fibber McGee and Molly.
Who did you say this man was, dearie, that you got the letter from?
Homer Vickery. Ever hear of the Vickery Vacuum Cleaner Corporation?
Yes. Any relation?
Any relation? Are you kidding? Homer owns it. Plug, nozzle, and bag.
Yeah.
He's got more dough than Senator Taft has got ambitions.
What does he want to see you about?
Oh, didn't I tell you?
No.
Well, years ago, I and Homer used to sell vacuum cleaners together, door to door together.
Oh.
And one day, I loaned Homer some money. He made a down payment on a correspondence course and studied night and day, and now he owns the whole company.
Oh. Mm-hmm. How much did you loan him?
$3.
$3?
Yep. Oh, it wasn't so much the $3 as it was my faith in him.
Yeah?
He figured if the tightest guy in Peoria had that much confidence in him, he had to justify it.
Well, you think he'll offer you a job?
I don't think so. Homer knows how I hate work. Probably want to hand me a few thousand shares of stock. It's worth about $90 a share, so 10,000 shares would be almost $1 million. Oh, boy, $1 million. Uh-oh, maybe that's Homer now. My gosh, $1 million. I hope he brought cash because
now, now, relax, dearie.
Hmm?
Let's not count our chickens till we lay a few more eggs.
Just a few
come
more.
In.
Hello there, kids.
Oh, it's the old-timer, McGee. Do come in, Mr. Old-timer.
Hi, old-timer. I thought you were somebody else.
Who?
Well, we were expecting an old friend of mine, old-timer. He's at a hotel downtown right now.
I stayed at a hotel once.
Yeah.
Back east. Didn't like it. Can't tell me it's healthy sleeping in a building with 2,000 other people, all strangers. No hotels for me, kids. It's too disturbing.
disturbing. What happened? Couldn't you blow out the light?
I didn't try, daughter. Threw a boot at it. Then I left a call for 6 a.m. so I could catch a train.
Well, did they call you at 6?
A.M. Yep, right on the nose, daughter. Well, sir, I leaps out from under the bed.
Out from under the bed? Why didn't you sleep on the bed?
Thing had a fancy cover onto it. I didn't want to muss it up.
Oh.
Well, sir, I rushes across the room to shave. They had a big picture of George Washington hanging onto the wall. I thought it was a looking glass. Took a look at it and says to myself, Criminy, I says, they woke up the wrong man. Yep. Went back to sleep and I missed my train.
Well, it's a good thing it wasn't a picture of General Grant. You'd have had a terrible time with those whiskers.
That's pretty good, daughter, but that ain't the way I hear it. I hear it, one individual says to t'other individual, say, he says, I see your brother got elected dog catcher. Congratulations. What are you talking about? Interrogates the second individual. My brother wasn't elected anything. That's peculiar, ejaculates the first character. He told me how to get up early tomorrow and catch a greyhound. I just stopped in to do you kids a favor.
What are you going to do?
Leave. See you in October, kid.
Ah, rugged old character, isn't he?
Yeah, he got some rugged old jokes, too. Hey, I wonder if I got enough cigars around here in case old Homer wants to smoke.
Well, if you're referring to your regular brand, I think one will be enough for Homer. Unless he's using vacuum cleaner bags for lungs.
Vacuum. Main thing is I want to make a good impression on him, so if he feels like making me general manager of the vacuum cleaner company, I'll be...
Oh, heavenly days, you suppose that's your friend now, dearie?
Definitely. I never heard our doorbell sound so much like a cash register before. Come in. Homer!
McGee!
Well, if this isn't a treat, Homer, long time no see.
Stop coining phrases, McGee, and introduce your friend.
Huh? Oh, yeah. Excuse me. Mrs. McGee, this is Homer Vickery.
How do you do, I'm sure.
Mrs. McGee, this is a great pleasure. A great pleasure indeed. It's quite obvious that you two are happily married. I have a little motto on the wall of my office that says, nothing improves a horse's neck like putting him in double harness.
Yeah. That's a very wise observation, Homer. By George, you haven't changed a bit, old man. A little grayer around the head and a little greener around the pockets, but the same old Homer.
Sit down, Mr. Vickery. I'm sure you and McGee have a lot to talk about.
Thank you. Rather a luxury for me to sit down. Always on the go, you know. It's the busy bee that gathers the honey. Yeah, that's one of my mottos. Another one is, if you want to know whether a man is going places, study his map.
Yeah, that's what I always say myself, Homer. I can see why you got to be a big shot. I never thought when I loaned you that $3 that got you started that you'd parlay it into a fortune. Not that I ever worried about that loan, not for one minute, no sir.
Well, I appreciate your confidence, McGee. I meant to get in touch with you for years, but somehow
Shucks,
I...
Shucks, Homer, I knew you'd remember it eventually. Never gave it a thought myself. Completely slipped my mind.
Well...
Why, on that rainy afternoon of May 17th, 1927... When you stood there in your shiny blue serge suit with the brown shoes and the maroon necktie in front of the vacuum cleaner office and put the sleeve on me at 3:16 p.m. for $3 so you could sign up for that correspondence course that you read about on page 125 of Popular Mechanics, and I forked over a $1 bill and a $2 bill, serial number A346872. I just considered that a friendly gesture. Put it completely out of my mind. I knew I'd get it back with interest.
And that is from a man who can't even remember his own wedding anniversary. Did you boys really sell a lot of vacuum cleaners?
Well, we'd have sold more if I'd understood production and sales methods like I do now, Mrs. McGee. But the man has to start somewhere, you know. I have a motto on the wall of my office about that. It says, people don't look up to a balloon just because it's full of hot air.
You said it, Homer. Remember how we canvassed the town with them vacuum cleaners?
Yes, you took the flats and apartments, and I took the bungalows.
Yeah, and I'll bet I set foot in every flat in that town. Flatfoot McGee, I was known as in them days.
Oh, dear.
Flatfoot McGee, the foxiest fellow who ever forced his peerless floor shimes in the front door of a fifth-floor flat and flung a fistful of floor on a frozen-faced female's fancy 14-foot fluff rug, flattering fluttering frails and fawning over their foolish families, feeling fine and full of fortitude, a salesman devoid of fraudulent trickery, founding a fortune for Homer P. Pickering.
Billy Mills in the orchestra and Across the Alley from the Alamo.
During the war, the Vickery Vacuum Cleaner Corporation converted to war production. Our motto was, on to victory with Vickery. What did you do during the war, McGee?
Who, me? I was an air raid warden, Homer. And I saved fats.
Yes, I see you did.
Show Homer my air raid warden's helmet, Molly.
It's on the back porch, dearie. I'm growing geraniums in it. You know what Dr. Gamble said? He said that helmet was finally holding something sensible.
Yeah. What did your plant make during the war, Homer? Machine guns?
No, we made corset stays for elderly admirals. Got the Navy E for it, too, with a citation. The citation said, without Vickery corset stays, we could not have held the front.
Yes, that's when the Navy took a lacing and liked it.
Getting back to us, Homer, who'd ever have thought that when we were slugging vacuum cleaners in the old days that we'd be sitting here now, the two of us, rich and happy. You rich and me happy.
Yes, and I've often wondered how I could best repay you for that loan, McGee. I finally decided...
Oh, for the... What timing?
Come in.
Hi, mister.
Oh, it's you, Teeny.
Hi.
Hello, little girl.
Mr. Vickery, this is Teeny.
Hi, Mr. Dickery.
Vickery, little girl.
Oh. I thought it was Dickery like in Hickory Dickory Dock, the mouse ran up the clock. The clock was on a sock and the man that was wearing it was kind of tickled about it. I know another one, too. Mary had a little lamb and then she had some more. The waiter charged her double and that made Mary sore.
Hey. Never mind all that now, sis. I don't like to be rude, but Mrs. McGee and Mr. Vickery and I were talking.
Oh, well, that's okay, mister. You go right ahead. I like to hear people talk.
Oh, you do, eh?
Yes, I...
I says you do, eh?
Do what?
Like to hear people.
Like to hear people what?
Talk.
Okay. Mary, quite contrary. Mary, quite contrary, how did your garden look? The catalog seeds turned out to be wheat, so I planted the darned old book.
Damn it.
Another one. and 20 blackbirds.
Excuse me, little girl.
Baked in a pie, hmm?
I find your rhymes quite amusing, but I do have business to discuss with Mr. McGee. Will you excuse us?
Oh, sure, Mr. Victory. You go right ahead. Find 20 blackbirds baked in...
Teeny. Look, sis, take a powder, will you? Scram. Here's 50 cents. Run down to Kramer's drugstore and buy a soda.
Okay. Here's 25 cents change. You're spoiling me. Get on, everybody.
Ah, lovely child. Now, what was
You were just saying you wondered how you could pay back that loan, Homer. Now, if I were you...
McGee.
Huh?
Why do you just, why don't you just let Mr. Victory, handle this thing in his own way?
Huh?
I'm sure he's accustomed to making bigger decisions than that.
Absolutely. I never fumble for a decision. Right or wrong, I make one. Shoeshine boy came into my office one day. Light or dark polish, Mr. Victory, he asked. Dark, I said instantly, never even looking up at my work. What if it did ruin a pair of white sports shoes? The fact remains that I was...
Hello, folks. Oh, sorry. Didn't know you had company.
Oh, hi, Junior.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox. Come in. This is Mr. Vickery, Mr. Wilcox.
Hello, how do you do, Mr. Wilcox?
Homer's president of the Vickery Vacuum Cleaner Company, Junior, and we were just talking about a little
bit. Oh, wonderful. I know your product very well, Mr. Vickery. You may have heard of my company, too. Everyone has. S.C. Johnson & Son, makers of Johnson's self-polishing glow coat.
Oh, yes. You're with glow coat, are
you? You don't have to be here long to find that out.
You and I should know each other, Mr. Vickery. With your product keeping housewives' rugs nice and clean, and my product giving their linoleum floor coverings that bright, gleaming shine that tells the world theirs is a well-kept house.
Yes, I have a motto on the wall of my office that says...
Glow coat shines as it dries without any rubbing or buffing at all.
Well, I didn't mean...
That's what makes it so easy for the housewife and so popular.
Yeah, but, Junior, don't you see...
You simply pour a little out, spread it around with a long-handled applier, Mr. Vickery, let it dry for 20 minutes or less to a handsome, glistening finish. That way you see...
Look, Waxy...
Yes, pal.
Can you take this matter up later?
Sure. How much later?
About October 7th.
I'll make a note of it. See you then.
Ah, nice chap. I know his company quite well.
Yeah, great outfit. Wilcox is a little gabby, but the company's okay.
Yes, I know. Oh, by the way, McGee, I'm going to have to leave you pretty soon, but before I go, I've got an envelope in my pocket I want to give you.
You mean, I hope you... Well, I wouldn't want you to feel that you had to do anything big for me now, Homer.
Well, I think this envelope will make you very...
Come in.
Oh, it's His Honor the Mayor. Do come in, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah, come in, Latrivia.
Oh, thank you both. Oh, am I in...
Not at all, Mr. Mayor. You're just in time for tea. This is Mr. Vickery, an old friend of McGee's, Your Honor. Mr. Vickery, His Honor, Mayor Latrivia.
It's a pleasure.
How do you do? Molly, did you say tea? I'd love it.
Good. I was just about to make some.
Fine. I've just come from a bit of squash at the athletic club, and I've got an appetite.
From what at the athletic club, Your Honor?
Squash. You know, I find a little squash in the afternoon gives me a great appetite for dinner.
Boy, that's as horrible a thought as I ever heard. A little squash in the afternoon. I can't even stand the stuff at dinner.
I don't know why. Squash is wonderful for the circulation, McGee. You ought to try it sometime. Either singles or doubles.
Oh, doubles. He never had a second helping in his life. Or a first either if he could help it.
I think I'm a little bit confused.
How do they fix squash at your athletic club, Mr. Mayor? Is it some special way?
No, I think it's the same every place. Most of us have our own special racket part, of course.
You do, eh? I used to have a great little racket when I ate in cafeterias, Latrivia. Used to butter a dill pickle and pass it off as a banana. Saved over 90 cents in 3 months. What's your racket?
There seems to be a slight misunderstanding here. I was referring to a squash racket.
Yes, yes, we know. McGee had his banana and dill pickle racket, and you had your squash racket. How do you work it?
I don't work it. It's a game.
Only till they catch you at it, boy. The day they found me buttering a dill pickle was the most embarrassing half hour
I ever... Please, please. Now, wait a minute. What is this, anyhow? I said...
Maybe I can help here, Mr. Mayor. There seems to be some mix-up.
Yeah.
Maybe if you explain how they serve squash at the club, it might help...
Serve it? Serve it? What? Why, it's served exactly like tennis. You throw it up in the air and smash it with a forehand drive.
That's for me, boy. Smash it right in the cook's push. there's any of it left, I'd rub it in his hair.
Oh, stop it. You vote very well. I mean, you know very well I'm talking about Goosh as a squint.
Huh?
And not Rack as a food. A food is a racket. When I mention the name of Garsh, the game of Squish...
Oh, now. Mr. Mayor, don't get excited. Here, sit down here.
He does this all the time, Mr. Vickery.
Yeah, take it easy, Latrev. We're not crowding you. Relax. Now, you were saying...
He was saying that squash is not a food, and while I disagree with him...
I didn't say anything of such.
Huh?
I mean, I didn't make any such ridiculous dickman.
What?
We do give it state rules. When McGee said he pickled a banana...
You...
Butted a squash of here.
No.
Cast a squisher up. I mean, I never said ate a squish, played a squick, screwed, squeezed, scudged,
McGee?
Yes?
Is it true that your broadcasting season is over until autumn?
Yes, it is, Mr. Mayor. Fred Waring comes on for Johnson's next week. Are you a music lover?
No, I'm a comedian hater. Good day.
Excitable chap, isn't he?
He didn't even stay for tea.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't stay either, Mrs. McGee. Thank you anyway.
Hey, now, don't rush away, Homer. My gosh, we got a lot of unfinished business.
Oh, yes, we have, haven't we? About that loan, you mean? Well, I'm not the man to leave details dangling in the air. I have a little memo on the wall of my office that says, "See Mr. Kriegmeier Thursday at 4. Know what that means?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Me either, Homer.
Me either. That memo's been there for 3 months, and I can't remember what was all about. Now then, McGee.
Yes, Homer, yes, Homer.
Here's an envelope. You'll find your $3 in there, of course. And a little something more.
Oh, Homer, my gosh. Oh, you shouldn't have done it.
Oh, open this after I leave, McGee. I don't want to be embarrassed by gratitude. All I can say is that you helped me over a rough spot. I hope this will help you. Goodbye, my boy.
Goodbye, Homer. Old friend. Kind old friend.
Goodbye, Mr. Vickery.
Goodbye, Mrs. McGee.
So long, Homer. Oh, baby, call the Bonton and see how late you can buy a mink coat.
McGee now.
Huh?
He said not to open the envelope till he left.
Well, has he left?
A long time ago. Open it up, quick.
Well, here's my $3, all right. And here's a...
A bond? A check? McGee, please, what is it?
It's a wall motto. Says, as you go along through life, no matter what your goal, keep your eye upon the donut and not upon the hole.
You were right, dearie.
Huh?
He shouldn't have done it.
No.
Bill and Molly will be back in just a moment. Now the King's Men sing "By the Watermelon Vine."
Lindy, 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 ain't you coming out tonight? Lindy, 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 you're as sweet as sugar cane. Lindy, 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 while the moon is shining bright. Lindy, 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 let's go walking in the lane. There's nobody looking, only Mr. Moon. Must you keep me waiting till tomorrow noon? There's a lot of happiness that we could soon be a-tasting. Time's a-wasting. Lindy. Lindy, Lindy, say you'll be mine when the moon ever shines. Then my heart. Lindy, won't you meet me by the water?
Hey, Molly, did you put out the milk bottles and lock the windows?
Yes, dearie. You seem to be pretty cheerful for a man who just lost a fortune a few hours ago.
I never really expected old Homer to do much for me. Any guy that would...
Oh, dear, who can that be? Come in. Oh, Dr. Gamble. Hello, doctor.
Hello, my dear. Hello, McGee.
Hi, Doc.
May I use your phone?
Sure, boy. Just take a nickel off our next bill. Or I'll drop in your office someday and use the X-ray machine.
A waste of time. A waste of time. You're very transparent as you are. Excuse me a minute. Hello, operator. Wistful Vista 8965, please.
Trouble some people go to for a free phone call.
Hello, Mrs. Clatterhatch.
Oh, her again.
Dr. Gamble, Mrs. Clatterhatch. What's the latest? He did, huh? Relapse? How much? 112? Why, that's wonderful, Mrs. Clatterhatch. I'm very happy about it. Good night, Mrs. Clatterhatch.
Well, that's a fine attitude for a doctor. Glad he had a relapse and very happy because the guy has a fever of 112.
Is Mr. Clatterhatch ill again, doctor?
No, he had relapse in the third race at Belmont and had paid $112 to place. Well, I don't suppose I'll be seeing so much of you two for a while. Isn't this the end of your season?
Yes, Doc. Next week, Fred Waring takes over. Drop in and listen with us some Tuesday night.
I'll do that, my boy. It'll be the first confidential conversation we've had in 40 weeks. Good night.
So long, guys.
Good night.
Lock the door, Snooky. I'm going to bed.
All right. I'm pretty sleepy myself.
Yeah.
Let's go upstairs. It's been a strenuous day.
You said it. If I'd had to listen to one more of Homer's wall mottos, I'd have scratched a man worthwhile as a man who can smile on the back of his big fat neck.
Oh, well, he wasn't... McGee, do you have to sit on the edge of the bed to take off your shoes?
Mm.
There are three chairs in the room.
If I sit in a chair, I lean back. If I lean back, I go to sleep.
I wonder if people know they can hear Fibber McGee and Molly on phonograph records now.
You mean those top 10 albums sold every place? I don't know. Think we ought to mention it?
Maybe not.
Yeah, I guess not. Wonder if Jack Benny and Eddie Cantor and Amos and Andy and Archie and Bergen and Burns and Allen mentioned theirs.
Yes, I think most of them did. Well, it's been a nice season, sweetheart.
Swell. Wonder if we sold much Johnson's wax this year.
Well, people still have floors, furniture, cars, and linoleum. We haven't exactly discouraged them from buying Johnson's wax.
I hope not. Oh, I'll admit we've made a few mistakes, of course.
Everybody makes mistakes. That just proves we're human, in spite of what anybody says.
Sure we are. I may say the wrong thing once in a while.
Once in a while?
Well, and any time I do, somebody tells me about it.
McGee, you've dropped three shoes. Slim, thank you for another pleasant year?
I did, yesterday.
I wish there was some way to thank all the people who sent us the nice letters and the people who listen every week. I don't know what we'd do without them.
I do, but I don't like to think about it.
What time are you setting the clock for?
October 7th.
Oh.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry, inviting you to listen in again next Tuesday night when you will hear Fred Waring and his Pennsylvanians. Good night. This is
is NBC, the national...
The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
Good evening, this is Ronald Coleman.
And Benita Coleman.
Inviting you to join us again on the campus of Ivy College.
And now, the Halls of Ivy.
We love the Halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
Welcome again to Ivy. Ivy College, that is, in the town of Ivy, USA. As a highly competent administrator, a fast clearer-upper of disposable details, and a disciple of the clean desk, the president of Ivy College is not one to linger unnecessarily in his administration building sanctum when his work is done, whether it be noon, 3 o'clock, or midnight. It's now 2:30 in the afternoon, and he's signing the last letter of the day's correspondence with his faithful secretary, Miss Goodson, standing by, blotter in her right hand and the presidential fedora in the other, as he says...
Good heavens, Miss Goodson, why do I dictate such long letters? What's this one about, before I sign it with blind faith in your efficiency?
It's a review of the year's work of the Student Cooperative Association, Dr. Hall. Suggestions for improvements and a pat on the back for scholastic achievements and their social program.
But it'd take me 3 pages to do that.
It took you 5. I cut it to 3.
Oh. And you didn't consider it presumptuous to take such liberties with my personal correspondence?
With your blind faith in my efficiency and my pride in your reputation as someone who gets to the point of things, no, sir.
Thank you for keeping my reputation unsullied. As one who takes 5 pages to write a 3-page letter, I am lucky to have you on my side. Is this the last one?
Yes, sir. Except the one you wrote to the music editor of the Ivy Courier. I didn't transcribe that one.
Oh, why?
Because after you'd read it over, you wouldn't have sent it. His criticism of the Glee Club concert was unfair, but your reply was hasty and unworthy of you.
Yes, we presidents don't seem to learn, do we, about sending letters to music critics? Well, thank you again, Miss Goodson. You are indispensable.
No one is indispensable, Dr. Hall, but a good secretary finds it indispensable to give the illusion of it.
Oh, that's a very acute observation. Did you learn that in secretarial school?
I learned it from you the first week I worked for you. Now, if you'll sign this letter, Dr. Hall.
Uh-huh.
Thank you. Your theater tickets for Friday evening are in your overcoat pocket. Your railroad reservations to the state capitol on Saturday will be confirmed in the morning. And one of the buttons on your left sleeve is a little loose.
What is the temperature outside and who won the World Series in 1934?
44 degrees and the St. Louis Cardinals. Will that be all, sir?
You mean for the Cardinals?
No, sir. For me, for you, for today.
Yes, that's all, Miss Goodson. Please phone Mrs. Hall, will you? And tell her I'm on my way home and to have a smile burning in the window for me. Thank you. Good afternoon.
I'm so glad you got away early, darling. And I did have a smile burning in the window for you.
You mean Miss Goodson gave you my message literally and verbatim?
Absolutely deadpan.
Her pan may sometimes appear to be defunct, my love, but it is my good fortune that her mental pallbearers will be unemployed for some time. It is due to her speed and competence that I so often manage to get home early.
And for that I love her dearly.
Yes, I see no reason for staying in my office arranging paper clips into mobiles when the real work of the day has been completed. Have there been any phone calls?
Only some woman who was very indignant because she had 2 heads.
Because what?
Because she had 2 heads. She was trying to get the grocery and got this number by mistake, and she'd ordered 1 head of lettuce and they'd sent her 2.
There are times when I'm tempted to ask for an unlisted number, but in my position, it'd be like the fire department making a similar request. My availability is one of the...
You'd better answer it, Toddy. You have a knack for coping with 2-headed people.
Oh, it's not a knack, my love. It's a proficiency acquired only after years of application and research. The manipulation of bicephalic individuals will have to be discussed at another time. Dr. Hall speaking. Who? Oh, yes. How are you, Professor Rubin? I'm happy to hear from you. Oh, why, yes, just a moment, please. He wants to talk to you, Vicky.
Really? Hello, Professor Rubin. Yeah, why, of course, I'd be very happy to. Mm-hmm. But tomorrow at 10? Well, good, I look forward to it. Goodbye.
And what happens tomorrow at 10?
Professor Rubin wants me to help him pick out a birthday present for his wife. It seems he's so nervous in women's shops, he always winds up at the hardware store. You know, once when I suggested hose for his wife, he said he'd got her 50 feet of it last year.
With an adjustable nozzle, I suppose. Yeah. Well, Professor Rubin is a gentleman of the old school. Mm. A school which had no classes in sales resistance to feminine fripperies. It must be that in these days of jet transportation, the world is so casually girdled that the informality has taken root. And we are the hapless victims of those corset and hosiery ads which smite us hip and thigh.
Well, you're not so bashful, darling. Or how did you happen to buy me those lovely things for Christmas in exactly the right shades and sizes?
For that, my darling, I fortified myself with 5 cups of coffee, gave myself a stern talking to, made out a list, walked firmly out of the house, stopped at the office, and deputized Miss Goodson.
Did she blush when you gave her the list?
Oh, no, dear. One of the priceless qualities she possesses is an ability to accept any assignment with cool detachment. I am sure that when she learnt about the birds and bees, it was from an elderly ornithologist in a business-like apiary. No, my darling, in this case,
it's a busy little beaver, isn't it? Hello? Oh, why, hello, Matthew. Yes, he is. It's young Matthew Walden, Toddy, Professor Walden's son.
Oh. Yes, Matthew. Why, certainly, come right over. Good, I'll be expecting you. I wonder what that means. He said he was phoning from right around the corner. And when a young man who lives at home calls from right around the corner, it could mean that...
The phone at his house is out of order.
Knowing Professor Jeremy Walden, I would say that he wouldn't tolerate anything being out of order in his household. Mm. Not because he is a relentless taskmaster, but because he has a sharply functional mind and an extraordinarily high set of standards. He's a very enviable reputation in his field, Vicky. Mm.
Whenever the students speak of him, they always seem to lower their voices unconsciously. Is that out of fear or awe?
Or what, dear?
Or awe.
Oh, awe! Well, no. Now, his course in Renaissance literature is one of the best liked and most feared courses that I've been.
Yeah, let me see. Now, Matthew must be a sophomore by now, isn't he?
Yes, and a very promising young student.
When I was a child, I deeply envied a little girl whose mother was the teacher of our school. I imagined that it was lots of fun having a direct pipeline to the inside dope. And I'm not referring to the teacher. But now I can see that it must have its own difficulties.
Oh, it does indeed. As Ben Jonson observed, greatness of name and the father often overwhelms the son. They stand too near one another. The shadow kills the growth.
You come right in, won't you?
Well, thank you, Mrs. Hall.
Dr. Hall's expecting you in the study.
I'm sorry to barge in on you like this.
Not at all. We haven't seen half enough of you lately.
Well, I'm sorry, Mrs. Hall. I've been working very hard, and I guess I just wasn't... I don't know.
Well, don't have a breakdown. It's just an expression of regret. Come along in.
Yes, all right.
Ah, Matthew, come in. Delighted to see you.
Thank you, Dr. Hall.
And how is my esteemed colleague, your father?
As a matter of fact, Dr. Hall, it's about my father that I... Or maybe I should say it's about myself that I came to... You see, Father and I... I'm not making a very good beginning, am I?
Oh, but you are, Matthew. You've already given us a glimpse of the situation, and my husband's like a camera. Give him a glimpse, and he has the picture.
Yes, but it sometimes requires a little extra development.
Well, I wouldn't have come to you unless I'd tried to work this thing out myself, but I just can't, Dr. Hall. You see, I'm a literature major, and I've always planned to work in the same field as my father.
Well, I have a particular interest in that field myself. In my own teaching days, I was set out to pasture there. Let's see now. As a sophomore, you are eligible for your father's in Renaissance literature. Did you register for it, Matt?
Yes, sir. Difficulty. I've worked very hard, Dr. Hall, and believe me, it's not just because father teaches.
Not.
I thought I was doing pretty well, but you know how correct and impersonal father is about work.
Oh, I do indeed.
Well, in trying to be completely fair, father's been leaning over backwards in his attitude toward me. His standards for me are even higher than for the rest of the class. He's been making it... I just can't tell you how tough. He's going to flunk me, Dr. Hall. He can't help himself.
Well, what do you mean he can't help himself, Matt?
Well, he's put us both on the spot. I've got to be good, but I can't be good enough for him. And if I flunk, well, I'll get over it, but father won't. I'll either have to change my major or go someplace other than Ivy. It's an awful mess.
And something that would be rather uncomfortable to discuss with your father, eh?
Yes, sir. Hmm. He'd consider it taking advantage of our relationship on a matter relating to the classroom. And now, Dante is coming up in the course. That's father's specialty. He knows more about Dante than Dante did. In fact, sometimes he manages to look more like Dante than Dante.
The only likeness of Dante I've seen was a big bust, and your father couldn't qualify for that.
Well, that's the whole story. I feel better now that I've told somebody.
Well, I know you love your father, Matt, and undoubtedly he loves you. And that's where the trouble is. He's afraid he'll put the heart before the course.
Well, now let me give the matter some thought, Matthew. Perhaps I'll be able to suggest a course of action. In the meantime, be patient and keep on working.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, Dr. Hall and Mrs. Hall. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Matt.
Goodbye.
Hmm.
Matt seems to be in quite a spot. Is his father really that grim?
No, but Professor Walden's a very exacting teacher. He believes in the value of repetition in education, familiarity through reiteration, like water wearing away stones. Little drops of Socrates, little drops of Dante, little drops of Pope.
Drop namer.
But Charlie...
It looks as though Abraham is about to sacrifice Isaac. You'd better get out the burning bush.
Well, I hesitate to intervene in anything so delicately balanced as a relationship between father and son. I'm inclined to agree with Oscar Wilde's observation that children begin by loving their parents. As they grow older, they judge them, and sometimes they forgive them.
Voice of America is bringing you this presentation of The Halls of Ivy, starring Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Coleman.
It's several days later when we return to The Halls of Ivy. Dr. Hall has been in his study a good part of the morning when his wife Victoria brings him the mail.
Here you are, Toddy.
Thank you, darling. Anything of interest?
Well, there's a letter from the Ivy Exterior Decorating Company.
Mm-hmm.
They'd like to paint our house with their new non-fading, insect-repellent, vitamin-enriched house paint. Starts out by saying, don't be a shabby neighbor. Shall I read the rest of it?
No, dear. Please don't. No, any letter which starts off with such an insulting premise consigns itself to the file and forget basket. Mm. If they don't like our premises, I don't like theirs. Besides, a vitamin-enriched house paint is not good enough in these days of super science.
No, of course it isn't. They don't even have chlorophyll in it.
Obviously an outmoded product, yes. We must have paint containing chlorophyll, B1 complex, penicillin, sulfur, and assorted antibiotics.
Mm. In 6 delicious flavors, too.
Does that constitute the morning's mail?
Well, no, not quite. The Committee on Buildings and Maintenance, headed by Professor Bronson, sends a plaintive little note. It seems that the research laboratory is overcrowded.
Mm, it's a perennial complaint.
Mm, the students say a degree of BSc means Bronson's sardine can. There's too much sympathy wasted on sardines anyway. Why do they need elbow room? They don't have any elbows.
Well, Vicky, what are we going to do about the Waldens, father and son?
Oh, I don't know. But whatever is done, I suppose it'll have to be done in such a way that the dignity of both Waldens is preserved.
I can't appeal to Professor Walden because that would put Matthew in the position of a plaintiff. And I can't counsel Matthew to bear it as best he can because that would imply a criticism of his father.
Well, it might not preserve their dignity, but I'd just knock both their heads together and probably end up by weeping copiously on both their shoulders.
Oh, you're underestimating yourself, Vicky. You'd probably handle the situation beautifully. I shall never forget watching a performance in London of a play in which you briefly appeared. Or perhaps I should say a play which appeared briefly with you in it.
Which play was that, darling?
I remember nothing about it except that there was a horse in the third act, which kept nibbling at your long blonde wig. Without missing a line, you calmly took off the wig and gave it to the horse to eat and comfort.
Yes, I remember that wig. The line down the middle of it was the best part in the play.
And, except for you, the horse was the best actor.
Yeah, well, let's say we were the best actresses, dear. She was a mare.
Horse or mare, I noticed she got a fine round of applause from the stalls.
Oh!
What was the name of the production? Madness at Noon? I never did figure out what that had to do with the play itself.
Oh, well, the title was all that was left of the original after the rewriting was finished.
Oh.
Yeah, they should have left the play and rewritten the title. The critics had such a jolly time with it, you know, Madness at Noon, Stupor at Midnight, and They'll Hate Themselves in the Morning, and things like that.
Yeah, the titles of bad plays have a morbid fascination for critics.
Yeah.
I remember a dreadful piece called This Too Shall Pass Away, to which one critic responded, "Let it not stand on the odor of its going."
Well, anyway, I knew the play was closing the next day, so it didn't matter. And Walden and Son will close too, Toddy, if you don't do something about them soon.
Well, unfortunately, if Professor Walden flunks his son, I'm afraid he will feel compelled to justify his action by even greater severity toward his student.
Yeah, and Matthew would never forgive him.
Now, if I could find some way to prove to Professor Walden how intelligent his son really is, and give him an opportunity to commend the boy's work publicly, then perhaps...
I know the signs, Dottie. You're way beyond perhaps. You've hatched a big fat plot.
Well, I had thought of visiting Professor Walden's classroom on some conveniently routine matter, in preparation for which I've been renewing my acquaintance with Dante. I've got to make sure that I make the right mistakes about him. That is, I will try to be wrong in the right way.
Dr. Hall, it's a privilege to have you back in the department again.
Well, thank you, Professor Walden.
I hope you can stay and join our discussion. If the smell of gunpowder has an effect on an old soldier, a former teacher like yourself should respond to the equally dynamic smell of powdered chalk.
Well, I've been studying your notes on the blackboard. They are far more legible than any I ever put up there.
We were discussing Dante and his beloved Beatrice.
Yes, the... best known today, I suppose, by their unreasonable facsimiles on calendars and cigar boxes. But I've always been fascinated by the complex relationship of Dante to La Donna Gentile Beatrice. The gentle damsel Beatrice, of course, appears in the Divine Comedy, but it was in the earlier work, La Vita Nuova, that Dante paid such eloquent tribute to his beloved. But, really, I didn't come to give you a lecture on what you already know.
No, please go on, Dr. Hall.
Well, then, Dante was only 26 when he wrote La Vita Nuova. That is, according to his first biographer. And incidentally, who was Dante's first biographer? Let me see. The other Mr. Walden. Matthew, can you tell me?
Yes, sir. Boccaccio.
Correct. Boccaccio. Who, as I'm sure Professor Walden has mentioned in passing, wrote other things besides the Decameron. And now that you are on your feet, Matthew, would you mind if I try another question on you?
All right, sir.
I would like you to identify the sonnet which so lyrically describes the early death of Beatrice.
Sonnet, Dr. Hall?
Yes. The one which contains those simple and eloquent lines, "Che fai, non sai novella? Morte è la donna tua,
Chiera Sibella. Dead is your maiden who was so fair. Do you recall it now?
Well, yes, I do, sir, but did you say sonnet?
That's right.
But, Dr. Hall, I'm sure it wasn't a sonnet.
Not a sonnet? Well, if it's not a sonnet, what is it?
It's a canzone, sir.
Canzone? Oh, no, no, I'm sure it's not a canzone.
Dr. Hall, the lines you quoted were written by Dante before Beatrice died and were inspired by a vision of her death, weren't they?
Yes, yes, that's quite right. They were, in a sonnet.
Well, but, well, those lines are in a canzone, Dr. Hall, I'm positive.
You are? Well, now, it's quite very simple. Why don't we appeal to the highest authority, Professor Walden? What was it, Professor? A sonnet or a canzone?
Well, Dr. Hall, I'm afraid I have to support my pupil. He is quite correct. It was a canzone.
It was? Well, thank you, Professor Walden, and thank you, Matthew. I think I'd better retire from the field. One more such blunder, and I shall never be able to face either of the Waldens again. I congratulate you, Matthew. Your father has a reputation for being exacting, and you've just given us a fine demonstration of your own sense of exactitude. And thank you all for the privilege of being with you.
Oh, Toddy, that was perfectly splendid. Now, what was the reaction of the class?
Well, they've been perfectly conscious of the emotional drama that has been taking place all semester, Vicky. So they were as delighted as I was with the outcome. Although I must say they were most unconcerned with the fact that my reputation became slightly tarnished in the process.
Oh, well, I'm sure it didn't, Toddy. Not even with Professor Walden.
Well, I don't know. Professor Walden is such a straightforward and direct man. My devious tactics may have escaped him.
Well, I'm sure he's grateful to you in any case. Well, I'll get it, darling. Hello, Matthew.
Hello, Mrs. Hall. Is Dr. Hall busy?
Come in, come in. We were just talking about you.
Ah, Matthew, I'm glad you came by. I wanted to thank you for helping me out of my difficulties this afternoon.
You thank me, Dr. Hall, for what?
For picking up your cue so quickly.
For being so distressingly accurate in correcting my blunder.
About that, Dr. Hall, my father and I have discussed the matter.
Oh?
And he wanted to make absolutely sure that I was correct, so he looked up the very best authority on the subject. I have brought the reference with me to show to you.
Oh, I'm perfectly ready to accept Professor Walden's own judgment.
Well, he was particularly anxious for you to look at this.
Oh, very well. Let me see it. Good heavens. So I am convicted by my own evidence. Well.
What is it, Toddy? Let me see.
It's something Father found in the files of the department.
Oh, it's the canzone form as used by Dante. Term paper by William Todd Hunter Hall. And, and you got an A+.
I'd forgotten about that completely. I'm afraid I'd make a very poor criminal. I leave a trail which could be followed on a rainy day by a bloodhound with a cold in the head, a tight collar, and a disinterest in the pursuit. I'm afraid I only deserve a C- in subterfuge.
You rate a straight A in the Walden household, Dr. Hall.
Well, as Dr. Hall's father used to say, Matt, it is not the grade which makes the man. It is the man who makes the grade. Isn't that what your father used to say, William?
Your memory, my darling, is more than phenomenal. It is positively supernatural. To think of your remembering things said by my father, whom you never met. But I'm sure that as a lover of beautiful things, he would have said them had he known you would repeat them.
Played by Herbert Butterfield, and Louisa is Elizabeth Patterson. Also heard tonight were Virginia Gregg and William Irwin. Tonight's script was written by Philip Nelson and Don Quinn. Music was composed and conducted by Henry Russell. Ken Carpenter speaking.
Oh, we love the halls of Ivy that surround us here today.
This production of The Halls of Ivy was broadcast with an actual audience present in the studio.
We'll be far, far away to the hallowed halls of Ivy.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.